making headlines this week was Prime Minister Scott Morrison's lack of a speaking slot at the UN Climate Action Summit. At the summit, the UN Secretary General encouraged countries to declare a climate emergency. So what does this snub mean? And how does Australia's climate policies affect international diplomacy? To discuss is Matt McDonald, Associate Professor of International Relations at the University of Queensland. Matt, how's it going? Thanks for joining the show.
No problem, Darren.
So, first off, what in your opinion does it mean that Australia was not even invited to speak at the summit? Is this a bit of a slap in the face or a reaction to kind of our policy up until this point?
It's certainly an indication that Australia isn't seen as a country that's got particularly significant ambition when it comes to its climate emissions reduction targets. So it's less a direct slap in the face and more just an indication that Australia is well off the pace in terms of the types of commitments that the international community would like to see from us.
Shouldn't it, or could you make the argument then, I guess, that to suggest that we should have been, or Australia should have been invited in that respect to say, hey, listen, you guys are relatively large stakeholder in this. Well, of course, the whole globe is, but I mean, in terms of what you could do relative to what you're doing at the moment, isn't there more of an onus, or I guess, I don't know, more significance to Australia getting invited then in that sense?
There's certainly a bit of a carrot or a stick, you know, approach to these types of issues. Does the international community want to snub a country as a way of saying, look, you, until you get your ambitions where they need to be, you're not going to be part of these big conversations, or do you actually try to drag them in? So I think the international community and the organisers, in this case the UK, France, along with the UN, probably made the decision that actually Australia really is at a point where we want to be seen to be, for domestic and international reasons, we want to be seen as a concerted international actor. Mm-hmm. They feel like if they're excluded from this type of thing, that might be enough to really help ramp up the pressure on the Morrison government to do more.
What about in the Pacific Islands? You'd said that the Pacific Islands Forum would be telling. The Fijian president said that he refuses to allow the Pacific Islands to be a sacrificial canary in the coal mine for, I guess somewhat ironically, coal-burning countries. What were the other main messages to Australia, assuming you can read between the lines there, from the forum?
Oh, look, it was very much along those lines, and similar to, not the same diplomatic fallout that we saw from the previous year's Pacific Islands Forum, but certainly a very strong indication from those states that something like moving away from using those Kyoto carryover credits that Australia was committed to is not enough, really, in terms of the scale of change that they would like to see and the scale of ambition that a country like Australia should have. And of course, this is a big issue for Australia in the region, given we are something of a leader in the region, and we've declared that actually we really want to be engaging more significantly with Pacific Island states, whereas for them, this is their biggest issue. It's an existential issue for them.
Could you possibly just give a little bit more insight into what those Kyoto credits are, and I suppose why you've said dumping them in the past won't salvage our international reputation?
Sure. So under the Kyoto Protocol, developed states were allowed to were committing to a particular emissions reduction. In Australia's case, actually, we negotiated because all the developed states had different levels.
Yep.
We actually negotiated to have an increase in our emissions of 8% by the target period. Now, the target period shifted over time because we couldn't get agreement in Copenhagen, and so it had to be extended. And so states in that instance carried over some credits from part of the Kyoto Protocol to the second period of the Kyoto Protocol. The Australian government is the only country to have made the case that actually we should be able to keep carrying over credits, so that if we do more than we committed to, we should be able to allow that to be taken into account. They've been the one state that said this should apply to the Paris Agreement. Most other states have said, well, no, this is a separate agreement to the Kyoto Protocol. So that's why it's controversial, along with the fact that actually Australia's initial ambition under the Kyoto Protocol wasn't nearly as significant as other countries.
What about in terms of what's going on at the US at the moment? You've said that the Trump presidency was a godsend for the Morrison government on a climate, at least as far as the climate was concerned, and that a Biden presidency might leave Australia exposed. What does this kind of administration or potentially mean for Australian climate policy and I guess how it's presented around the world?
Yeah, so I think in the first instance, in a way, having Trump, the big change, no matter how much Biden really pushes actively, climate change is an issue. He's indicated that he will. But even if he doesn't, what Australia loses with Trump leaving office is the opportunity to point at another comparable country and say, well, look, at least we're still in the Paris Agreement, at least we're still making commitments on climate change, mm-hmm. not like the US. So that changes, and therefore this source of sort of consolation for Australia where you can point to others who are doing worse than you.
Yeah.
Is. So that's one thing. And then if Biden does make good on his commitments to really ramp up action on climate change to meet these net zero emissions by 2050 targets, then lots of external pressure on Australia to align with increasing levels of domestic pressure as well.
How close are we to, say, in 50 or 60 years from looking back, irrespective of how bad the climate will be or the environment will be at that point? You would have to assume it's going to be in a worse shape than it is or worse shape than it is at the moment. But how close is Australia to being the bad guy, to being the antagonist of sorts in the history books in a couple of decades' time?
I think it's very close. I think Australia is actually now on the verge of, we used to be a laggard, so falling behind other states. Now I think we're drifting into pariah territory.
Yeah, right.
You know, so it really is the case that actually countries around the world with climate ambition or who are vulnerable to climate change would be looking at Australia saying it's that sort of country that's the problem, a country that has the capacity to transition away from fossil fuels and to make strong commitments. It's got domestic support for it and yet continues to not only commit to fossil fuels and a fossil fuel economy, but actively, according to the IMF, subsidises that industry by billions of dollars a year.
I guess we've got all the natural resources to do so to have kind of effective change. But anyway, we'll see what happens. But thank you so much for joining the show, Matt, this morning. I do appreciate your time and I hope you have a good week.
You too, Jared. No problem at all.
Cheers. Thank you. That was Associate Professor Matt McDonald from the University of Queensland on Australia's Climate Summit snub and what it means for Australia's international reputation and relations. And I guess key takeaways there from the Pacific Islands Forum, our neighbours just to the east, someone that we should be looking after. But I don't know. It's not up to me, unfortunately.